And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Cynthia L. from San Diego.
Whew. Let me just shake it out for a second. Whew. That's a big meeting. Let me go. Whew. A couple more times. I'm Cynthia. I'm a grateful alcoholic. As of June 13, 1982, I have 30 years of sobriety. And it's because of you guys in this room. I don't care, happy birthday, the tokens, the birthdays, because of you being in this room, I'm sober today. You know, and what's really sexy is this is XXX. let's shake it up. Woo, that just, you know. I can say that with 30 years now. This is hard to stand up here and share, but I do it because I am sober today. And the reason I say that is because I believe my alcoholism, I was born with it. My opinion, I was born with alcoholism. And the reason I say that is because the moment I started drinking, and you know, I'll go back to what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But I didn't want you to know how fearful I was. I didn't want you to know what a scared kid I was. I don't know why. I was just scared. I was scared to show you who I was, what I was. I was so fearful, yet inside me, I had this energy that I just needed to be the best. Where'd that come from? You know, I had to prove that I was okay because I had so much doubt, fear, and I didn't like myself. I mean, I realize now through a little sobriety is because I always constantly focused on what I wasn't, not what I was, you know. In a very young, I'm not the smartest one, you know. They told me when I was in my adulthood that I was dyslexic, you know. And when I was a small kid, I thought something was wrong. You know, I couldn't write, I couldn't read. The teachers would punish me and put me in corners. And really was, I didn't even go to Catholic school, but they were very abusive. And you know, it's nothing new in the story, but I felt different. I felt like I didn't belong. I didn't feel comfortable in my skin, in my body. You know, my grandparents, we would go, and I was about 4 or 5, and they were, I'm going to say they were alcoholic. They never admit it, but they were blue-collar workers. We would go in, and, you know, Monday through Friday, they worked really hard. They packed their lunch. They worked, you know, in Washington, and it was a secret thing for the government. I still don't know. But then they would come home, and come Friday evening to Sunday, Mama and Papa would drink beer. Now, when I was a little kid, and this is why I said I was born an alcoholic. When I was a little girl, my grandma, Mama, said, if you stay in the kitchen, watch me fry up some fried chicken, I'm going to give you a little glass of beer. I couldn't wait to go in the morning and have that beer. And I would sneak some. You know, she would give me a little glass and say, now, don't you tell your mama. You know, my mom. And I remember feeling different when I had that, you know. And I'm, you know, now I'm thinking, who feels that? You know, I couldn't wait to get up in the morning like I do now with a cup of coffee. You know, how you get up and can't wait to have that coffee. That's how I was to have that little cup of beer. You know, and when we went along, you know, I had my childhood was beautiful. I had a great parents. You know, they worked really hard to provide for my brother and I. They would have sometimes party. Now I'm probably, and I'm not terrific at, you know, dates and ages, but I could say that I was probably, I don't know, I had a stingray. You know, it's amazing when you're little what you associate with, like, your years. I had the, you know, that great little stingray sissy bar bicycle, and believe me, I always, and it even got more severe, but I, you know, I was the kid that, you know, tried to do the wheelie down the street, and if I fell, I'd get back up. I was Evel Knievel as a woman, you know, better, harder, faster, go. And I didn't know anything. I sure didn't know the word no. Guaranteed, didn't know it. So my parents would have parties, and I was the one, and it didn't change when I got into my adulthood, but they would have parties, and I realized that I wasn't like my brother watching movies and, you know, being a good boy. I was sipping on everybody's drink. You know, they would talk and put it down, and I was sipping. And then, you know, I don't know, you know, probably 10, probably 8, something around like that. But I never thought anything about that. And then I got into my junior high years, and that's when the trouble really started. I really felt out of my skin. I felt stupid, really ashamed, scared, you know. I started liking girls and boys. It was so mixed up, you know. It was just crazy. And I started, you know, back then, you know, it's the 70s. You could get, you know, racks of barbiturates, 4 reds for $1, you know. And I would get lunch money, and I would get that and have some liquor. And, you know, that started. And I can't, you know, I don't know what my first drink was, but I know I always went to beyond wherever I could go with that. There were times they would call me, and I don't know if it was the drinking or the alcohol in school in junior high. They would call on me to read, and I was so fearful I would drop out of, and I could only do this, you know, a little drunk. We would, you know, take reds or drink a little in the morning. And if they called on me to read or write, or, you know, I would fall out of my chair and pretend like I had an epileptic. You know, that's how fearful I was. I got really, really manipulative and, you know, crazy very young. Was that the alcohol? Was that the drugs? Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I would, you know, I mean, this is where it all started, and it worked. So I kept on doing it. I became a cheater, a liar. I would put a rock in the door and sneak in for spelling bees, you know, so you wouldn't know how stupid I was. I mean, we went to every lengths, and it got worse. It never got better. You know, I continued now, and I could tell you, I mean, I've been arrested a lot of times. But the first one, I could tell you, we're in junior high, grew up in San Diego, was at Pershing Junior High. I don't know if anybody went. And there was a 7-Eleven down the street, you know, and it was, I didn't think it was a bad deal, and I would always meet with troublemakers because they would go in on this with me. I went into the liquor store and took a bottle of wine after school. Went, yeah, that worked. We went out and drank it. Went back in to get another one, and the woman grabbed me, slapped me. I got scared, and the wine dropped. That was my first arrest, and it started in. You know, that was the first time I got arrested. Now, I didn't think anything about it. I was so self-centered as a kid, or selfish, or scared, or whatever you wanted to call it, that because it was juvenile hall, my poor mother, they would take me home, and she put up with me. My mom would even, you know, my mom and dad had a Denny's restaurant. So, you know, she was always like, oh, honey, it's okay. You know, don't worry. We'll, you know, get something to eat and it will be okay. Until the next time. I didn't want people to be mad at me. So I, you know, as a teenager, I would drink. I'd always get in trouble. You know, today I say to myself, I love cops because thank God they would capture me. We would be drinking on, you know, on a golf course, and sure enough, cops! I would run, and I was probably halfway in a blackout or loaded, and they would catch me, scoop me up. Well, I'm a juvenile, so they would have to take me home. Or they would take me to my mother's because she worked graveyard at the restaurant. And again, she would feel awful. And I would, you know, be sick, have a hangover, feel ashamed. And then I would be okay for a while. You know, I would, you know, I became kind of periodic and I would get the heat off me. By the time I was 16, 6 months into my 16, knock, 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 a cop's pulling me over. I fell asleep. Now, this is 16, at a stop sign. Thank God my foot was on the brake, and I hear this tap, tap, tap. Now, I'm only 16 and a half. That's like, oh, my God. I looked at him, and I went, oh, no, you don't, and I started running. I'm going to go as fast as I can because you're not going to chase me. That was my first DUI. But of course, the cleverness, we found a good attorney that got it because back then, there was Lucky Deuce and some other things, and my car wasn't moving when he first came up to me, so it was not a violation. So boy, did that hit me. You know, and here was my thinking. Well, I didn't really, that was, you know, a DWI, it's not that bad. You know, because we got it reduced. It went on like that. I can't begin to tell you from the age I did get sober at 25. And from 16 to, I mean, on my 21st birthday, I actually did not drink because I knew I'd go in a blackout and it would be awful. You know, so from the time 16, by the time I was 18, I was arrested many, many times again. They would bring me home. The neighbors, and like my mom said, you know, aren't you ashamed? They always see you coming in with a cop. One time I was on a motorcycle, and I didn't have any clothes on. Now, when I drank, which I'm kind of hot up here right now. Watch me. I may start. No. When I drank, if I potted, you know, because I would potty on the curb, and if it got wet, I would just take off my pants and not think anything of it. This is the kind of the insanity that I didn't think anything was wrong. I had another person that drank with me, and the bars were closed. And this is, again, the craziness that I never thought anything wrong. That we broke into the bar. Ball Express, it was 2:30, they kicked us out, we went, hell no, she took her heel, and she went, boom, and it broke the window, the alarm goes off, she was able to get the door open, we got all this liquor, she put on, love to baby, and then we ran out and watched the freaking cops come, as we're drinking away, and we didn't think anything like that, nothing, it was just fine. That continued. I mean, I have so many stories like that. But the thing is it got worse and worse and worse. You know, and the sad part of it is how many people I hurt along the way, you know, that I didn't see. All I saw is I was running and nothing was wrong with me and how clever I was. You know, how wonderful. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. Now, they started to do. Now, I would start doing all the service. They would have me go back then to AA, and I thought, Hell no. I went into that room one time and went, these people are very scary. They are too scary. And I would learn to just sign, you know, I would go to the first meeting, see the initial. I'm just going to copy exactly that. And, you know, I would forge it because that's what I learned in school. I would cheat. I would lie. I had to clean up trash in the big wagon along the beach. So I would do this. I would get the heat off me. I would pay for it, get all kind of cleaned, and then it would be another month, and then I would hit it. And when I drank, I would go into a blackout, get arrested. Something would happen. You know, one time I was driving, and this is just insanity of it, driving, and I wake up in a blackout, and my door's on. Where the frick is my door? And I'm going, shit, where's the door? It's so cold in here, and I'm just driving. No big deal. I'll just go to sleep and deal with it in the morning. And I made it home, and thank God. And that's why I say, if there's any cops in here, I love you guys, because you always picked me up. I didn't hurt another person. I just emotionally hurt people, but I never physically hurt someone because I love to drink and drive. They would always capture me. You know, and that just continued. It was maddening, and I never thought anything was really wrong. And that's the sanity. That truly is. I have my family here that knew me drinking. And boy, we go back, you know, we go way back. And because of them, again, I'm sober today. They're the ones who would pick up the pieces, dust me off. My mother, through this sobriety, she passed away 5 years ago. I know she's sitting in that chair. I didn't have to drink a drug when she passed away. You know what I mean? I'm sober today, and she's there, and they're here to celebrate in life, because through Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to have a life that I can't even imagine, my dreams and my life, how good it is. So going back to this, I by the time I was truly 24 years old, I think I had 7 DWIs, aiding and abetting, and maybe 20 arrests. And, you know, I just, again, thought, well, I'm just going to, you know, pay for it. And I was a periodic. And what happened is that it was the, and I'll never forget this. And I think I had 6. And it was on June 12th. But I call my sobriety June 13th, 1982, because it was about 5 minutes to 12. And I'm on the freeway, and I just came from a big, huge party, and I went from the slow lane to the one more time. Now, by this time, I did have to do, like, it was Sybil Brand in L.A. But, you know, here's how delusional my head was. I'm just going to go up there and catch up with all my magazines. That was a weekend I had to go to jail and, you know, do some time. And I got in a bus with a whole bunch of felonies, chained. I'm chained, and I'm walking like this in this bus, the only girl. And I had to go to Sybil Brand and take care of that. But you know how delusional my head was? Oh, it's like a movie. How fabulous. This could be kind of good. This could be a story. Because I knew I only had to stay 24 hours. But I'll tell you what, that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. Again, I was on the fast track going as hard as I can. And I got out of there, and what was the first thing I did? Picked up a drink. What was the first thing I did all these other times? Picked up a drink. Oh, God, that was interesting. That was fun. Picked up a drink. Or I was so ashamed, so scared that I would just stay, you know, in remorse and, you know, have those hangovers, You know, that reminds me, you know, how fast 30 years go by, 30 days too, but how fast 30 years go by considering how long, when I had that hangover and I used to say, dear God, help me through this and I'll never do it again, which was a big lie, that day of a hangover in the bathroom would feel like a week. And then I would just, you know, I would just try to, you know, get through. I'd always get everybody on my side. I would never do that again. I am so sorry. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And I'd do it again. And my family here would go, oh, God. Can't you just have one drink? You know, they didn't know what to do with me. So that day that I went over on the freeway, it changed. It changed. And what changed is I saw the red light and the cops pulled me over. And for the first bit, now, I really felt it. I can't tell you, but I felt it like I've never felt it before. But I felt something like that, but not this. And I immediately stumbled out of the car, and the cop came over and says, get over to the side. I said, take that gun and shoot me. Every sick animal should die. And that was the first time I admitted. It was the sickness. Now, I almost took that back. I almost took it back. Yeah, the right race silent, blah, 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 in the car. You know, got arrested. My family picks me up in disgust. And there was, you know, and I could see it on their face one more time. 20 arrests later, 7 DWIs. I had one in L.A. that I had to go to maybe the following week. Now, I don't know if I was really heard that or if I was just scared shitless. You know, because when I got real scared shitless, I would shape up for a little, and then I'd do it again. Went to sleep, woke up. My mom here, my second mom, said, I went to go get a beer, and she said, Cindy, what are you doing? I went, she's right. And I said, okay, and it was about 9:30, and I called Charters. I'm looking through the phone book. Okay, I'm going to admit for the first time in my life that maybe I need help and I'm not clever anymore. Because I'm in trouble. I think that was really it, you know, because I still was self-will run riot and totally in control, you know. Called Charter, and this is a perfect example. I said, so how much are you? And they go, well, it's about $30,000. I went, I'm sick, but not that sick. Click, you know. And then there was a program, and it was called Villa View. And I called, and it was an angel, an angel's voice, and said, can you come down here now? I'll come get you. And I don't remember if she did come get me or if I drove. I'm not sure because it was the day after arrest. And I got there, and she shared with me that I didn't have to drink ever again. I said, really? She said, yeah, just stay in the program 30 days and you won't have to. I said, yeah, but, you know, here goes the drama. Yeah, but I got a DWI and blah, 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 and the drama was here and my life was drama. But I thought that was pretty exciting because, you know, I'm a creative person. How, you know, those are kind of just the arts of me. And so I started the Villa View, you know, the program. And I started listening for the first time to people. And I would hear one thing and I'd hold on to it and put it in my pocket. And I would hear another thing. And I got 30 days. Now, the first 30 days, I couldn't say, not that I didn't want to, but again, I'm stupid, dyslexic, I didn't really like myself, and to say I was alcoholic, my upper lip would shake like this. I couldn't even say it, I was so scared. After the second month, I started to say, I'm alcoholic. I'm not sure if I believed it, but you said fake it till you make it. And that really made sense to me because I faked it all of my life. So if I could fake it all of my life about being a stupid kid and this and that, I could maybe do this. And I got another month. I started to do exactly the program. I listened. For the first time in my life, I said, I'm going to try this. And I listened. And it's a miracle. This program is a miracle if we just let go and truly let God. And, so I did that, and then I got 6 months, and I got the sponsor, and I did exactly what they said. I went to a meeting every day, sometimes two, sometimes three. I did whatever it takes. I became the service. Now, my head always told me, you don't have to make coffee. You did that when you were growing up at Denny's, for God's sake. But I just shut up. I had that tape running. I had all that happening. But I just said, stop. I didn't know what God was, but I knew I felt like God was in my life. Now, many, many times I've had God come in through that drunkalogs and things when I would say, please help me, and I'd take it back. And I shared this last week, but this was a perfect example that I was really loaded in San Onofre. And this, I remembered this after I got sober. I didn't at the time. I just went, whoa, that was crazy. Because I almost died several times. I always was a drunk. I lost my pants. I would fall over. I couldn't get my legs working. I crawled. I was always dancing on the tables. One heel was lost and no pants on. That was the kind of drunk I was. So, and it was nasty and it wasn't pretty, but I thought it was just a grand time. Where's my jewelry? Where's my heels? Okay, where was I? Oh, yeah, so now for thank you. I was walking up, peyote'd out, loaded out of my mind on alcohol, and I was like, wow, the sunset, you, and my body. I'm walking up the hill, and the cliffs are there. The rocks are there. My body went and started to fall. I lost, and I went dizzy, and I started to fall. I'm falling. And a friend went, Sandy! And my body literally, she said, moved over 350 feet and landed in this drainage opposed to the cliffs where I could have died. And I think about that because we are so lucky, I feel, and that's why I said I'm grateful to be an alcoholic, because we get to share with other alcoholics and have these steps that a lot of people don't, that is life-saving. We get this. I feel really privileged to be able to be alcoholic in order to learn how to live. And so I remember that as I'm trudging along in sobriety, learning to live. Okay, I'm not going to drink and I'm not going to drug, but how do you live? I have these feelings and these thoughts, and you taught me. You taught me how to live. You taught me how to do the steps. 9 months into my sobriety, now this time, and I did the 4-step. You know, I had a lot of amends, and I continue to do the steps. You know, the amends are different today. You know, it's like, you know, through my sobriety, I've changed the price tag once. What am I doing changing a price tag? You know, and I had to make amends and make up for that. It's crazy thinking, you know. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. This is, you know, my brain. About 9 months into my sobriety, the court said, you got to do some jail time. Enough is enough. Okay. But they allowed me to go to meetings till about 9 months. So I could get 9 months, and I went into jail. And I spent 145 days in jail. I got my first AA birthday cake in jail, which was pretty pretty exciting. And you know, I mean, it was, you know, and then they put me on work furlough, and I realized, because I'm alcoholic drug addict, the people that frisk you coming back into Alcoholics Anonymous, if I act like I like it, they wouldn't frisk me. So I would go, ooh, yeah, and they would go, go on. But I had nothing to hide, you know. I was truly doing one day at a time, a step at a time, a minute at a time. And, you know, my family here, I would go into work in this very shishy clothing store selling these stupid $300 and $400 pants and shoes. And then I'd go into the bathroom, put my jail sweatshirt on and a pair of jeans and go back to jail. But see, an alcoholic, me being an alcoholic, I could do that really well. You know, I wore a lot of hats. I played a lot of different characters. That was nothing new, you know? And I did that, and I started cleaning up the wreckage of the past. They would have dinner for me. Miss Pepino, my love, who I love so much, my second mom, she would always have pasta waiting for me, eat there, because she didn't like the food that I was eating there. So she, you know, she would feed me, and I'd go back into jail on the weekends. I stayed there, and again, I'm not sure that a day at a time I have 30 years. Back then, I still wasn't sure. I just did the program, and I wasn't sure if I was just staying. I can't tell you honestly if I really got it or if I was just trying to stay out of trouble until I had no more. Do you know? So I remember getting out of jail, and it was a 7:30 in the morning. And if anybody's been to Las Colinas, you walk down this hall, and it was kind of glistened, the sun and that. And I went, wow, I just did something, and I just cleaned up a part of the wreckage, just this bit. I think I could do it. And I had hope, and I said, dear God, please carry me. And before that, I started to have, because I didn't know really God, and I didn't know, I started to have little characters. I had a Roman guy on one shoulder and a mermaid on the other, and I would talk to them. And they guided me, because I needed help. I needed to, you know, hold on to something, and then I would also talk to God. And, you know, I really... Wow, time flies. Okay. So I started really cleaning up the wreckage of the past. I got the sponsor, and I started doing the steps. And a day at a time, I got a year. I got two. It got better. One time I was in a lot of pain before, and it was probably in about 5 years, and I went to the beach, and I said, dear God, I'm in so much pain. I don't want to drink. I don't want a drug. I don't know what to do. I'm in pain. Please help me. You know, you see her, go to the meetings, get a sponsor, talk to your sponsor, do those things, but you're still in pain. Sometimes life is really tough. My brother was diagnosed very early with AIDS, and he died in my sobriety. He died after 6 months. In 19, I was five or six. I said, dear God, please help me. And I got down on my knees. And He said, you know what, Cindy? And I heard this voice inside. You can see, you can feel, you could touch. Give it back. Now, when I got out of jail, I had to clean up the wreckage of the past. I lost my license for 3 years. I had to take the bus. I had to live close. You know, poor me. When you let go and let God, really, after that voice, I was honored to take the bus. I got a job doing display, and it was very close. I took the bus, and I felt really like, God, I'm going to really do this. And right when I accepted, this is the miracle. Once you accept Alcoholics Anonymous, once you accept that you're alcoholic, once I accepted, I'm going to take the bus, and I'm going to be proud about this. I see a woman who's crippled that gets on the bus, and she's as happy as can be. Shame on me, right? I'm going along. All of a sudden, I get off, and this guy in a cab said, hey, he goes, would you like me to take you? I came from Vietnam, and, you know, you could pay me monthly, and I could be a chauffeur for you. And I went, really? How much would I pay? Very little. So he started chauffeuring me. So I thought, wow, I don't have to do this job. My dream was to design clothing, and I didn't know how I was going to get there. You know, I took some classes, this, that. All of a sudden, I went to this job interview, and this is the beauty of sobriety. And that is that this gentleman said, can you get on a plane and go to New York, meet me at 9 in the morning, and then go on to India and develop that line you want? That's God. And that guy in the taxi that was my chauffeur drove me around all these places to make this happen. And in less than 24 hours, I was on a plane in India. Through my sobriety, it's been, I can tell you right now, the thought of drinking and drugging is completely removed. Life is tough, but we have the 12 steps to live. We don't have to drink or drug ever again. My life, dreams have came true, and I noticed around 10 years of my sobriety, I'm here to stay, and I like this. I started to have dignity. I started to have faith. I started to say, it's okay that I'm dyslexic and alcoholic. And you know what? If they think I'm stupid, so be it. Wow. I started to lose some of that fear. I started to like me. That was huge. You know, I started to really like me through my sobriety. And, you know, if I drank and drugged one time, I think it's my death. And I take this program really, really seriously. And I lost, after 15 years, my sponsor to this disease. That hurt. It hurt when I lost my mother 5 years ago. It hurt. When my brother passed away, it really hurt. You know, a doctor said to me when my brother passed away, hey, are you okay? Do you need Valium or anything? And I looked at him and I said, not today, but I'll let you know. And I never had to do that. I never had to take that Valium, you know, because of this program. Because of this magic, magic program. My life, I have the freedom today in my sobriety that I never, ever thought was possible. I went on to go around the world, go to all these beautiful cities, not even on my dime. Hello? That was like a dream come true. Today, my life is so terrific. I'm working with my family and my best friends. You know, how lucky is that? You know, my life is full today. I am so happy and pleased. And I want to share this little thing with you, and I'll close with that because I'm getting the ticket. This program will work, and it works because everybody who works it, it works. And if it doesn't, it's because you are not allowing it to work through you. And that's magic. I have this thing that I thought was really special, and I'm going to read it to you because I think it's pretty. And it says, your journey has molded you for the greatest good. You for your greatest good. And it was actually what it needed to be. Don't think you're lost or you've lost your time. It took each and every situation you have ever encountered to bring you to the now. And the now is right on time. Right now is the time, this minute, and for the grace of God, we will all be sober today, one more day. And that's all it is. And I thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you and to spread some love and spread it back and be safe and well. Thank you.